Well, it is April 29th, and we're here with Dr. Keith Edwards. He is a consultant, a coach. He's involved in research and writing and public speaking. He's a real higher education renaissance man. He really focuses on helping individuals, organizations, and communities reach their full potential. Some of his topic areas include sexual assault prevention, men's identity development, social justice education, curricular approaches, and leadership development. He also has experience working in college administration and as teaching faculty. And I believe you're joining us today from the East Coast, right?
No, I am here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where it is 49 degrees and rainy. Yeah, I do too. I do too. I love it very much. Thanks for having me with you.
Good music. Yeah, of course. Great. Thank you for joining me and us this morning. So we are talking a bit about the curriculum approach and its use in student affairs. And I often describe student affairs as separating a university into halves, and one being academic and kind of faculty life on one side, and then student life and activities and that on the other side. My grandmother thought that when I went into student affairs, I was a principal in a high school.
I said, kind of like that.
Yeah, sure. If that's what helped her. So in thinking about teaching and learning outside of the classroom, what does that look like on a college campus, and how can we develop meaningful curriculum?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the way I think about it is that there is sort of the two halves, faculty, academics, courses, classes, all of that. But then the other half is the student affairs realm, which I think of as all the learning that happens beyond the classroom. Mm-hmm. Through athletics, through student organizations, through living on campus, through falling in love and falling out of love, to deciding you're not going to play soccer anymore, you're going to focus on other things, all of those things. I had an opportunity years ago to do orientation with parents and families at an institution, and I would talk with about 500 parents and families every session, and I talked to about 3,000 parents and families every summer, and I would always ask those of you who went to college, and in that room it was about two-thirds of that audience had been to college. When you look back now at your college experience, what's the most valuable thing that you learned that you still think about to this day? And just think about that. And we give them a moment. And then I would say, now raise your hand if you learned that thing in class. And over years of talking to probably 10,000 parents and families, one or two people ever raised their hands. The most valuable things that we take with us 10, 15, 20 years later are the things that we learned outside the class through those difficult decisions, learning about difference, learning about conflict, failing miserably, all of those things. And those are the things that we look back on years from now. And one of the things we know is that thinking about this as the half, the only reason it's half is because the faculty and the staff are about 50-50, right? But in terms of students and how they experience college, they spend way more time outside of class than they do in class. And they spend way more time, even if you think about being in class and studying and reading and doing assignments, but much more of their time is with friends, in the dining hall, going to speakers, going to events, having conversations. And so Learning Reconsidered, really a document by ACP and NASPA, really helped us recognize through a lot of brain science and neuroscience that students don't experience these as halves. They don't experience academic in class and then the dining hall and living on campus and their student organization. They don't differentiate. Their brains light up in terms of how they learn in exactly the same way as in those settings. And so how do we not stick with our outdated bifurcated structures, and how do we organize the college experience around students and how they experience college? And they experience all of this. They don't experience class and out of class. They experience college as this whole thing, right? And so, yeah, the curricular approach is really about how do we be as intentional with the learning and opportunities and sequencing and constant improvement with the beyond the class experience as we do with the in the class experience. And there's a lot more nuance and opportunity in that for us to be inventive and innovative and creative in doing that.
So you're really talking about leveraging that time that they spend out of the classroom, which is, as we know from working with students, is so much more, and they're making decisions all the time about how to use that time and helping them use that effectively.
Right.
So how do you know that the curriculum that you've created, that it is leading to student learning?
Mm-hmm. Well, just maybe a brief explanation about the curricular approach. The curricular approach is, let's just take a step back.
Yeah.
And forget everything we've ever done. Forget everything, all these programs and initiatives, not because they're bad, but let's just take a step back. All those things we've gotten awards for, let's take a step back. What would we want students at our institution to learn? And that would be different at Linwood versus St. Louis College of Pharmacy versus SLU versus Washington University in St. Louis, right? These are completely different institutions who are promising completely different things to completely different populations of students. And so what would we want students at our institution to learn? And a lot of times people are not clear about that. Mm-hmm. And a curricular approach says we have to get collectively clear, because if you value outdoor experiential education, because that's your personal passion, and I value learning about privilege and oppression, but and we go about our business, that's not about the students. That's about you, mm-hmm. and that's about me. It's about my ego. It's about your personal passions, and it's not about students. So what we have to do is get collectively clear about what the purpose of this is, and then how do we align our work to move it towards what we want students to learn. And the curricular approach is really borrowing from what faculty do. You know, faculty have a major. They're very clear about what they want their major graduates to achieve by the end of their experience. And then based on that, they design courses to achieve that. Students have to take some, but they have some choice in some others. And so how do we bring that level of intentionality? What do we want collectively our students to learn? What's our major beyond the classroom? Is it global citizenship? Is it leadership? Is it positively contributing to communities? And then how would we break that down? And then the courses become the career center, and the learning strategies become their individual interviews, resume workshops, appointments, major fairs, career fairs, all of those things. And in conduct, it becomes how we communicate about the policies. How do we notify students? How do we engage in conversations about their conduct violations, the sanctions, the follow-up, all of those things. So how do we align what we do with what we want students to learn? And frankly, a lot of times we look at what we do and then we decide that's what we want students to learn, right? Mm-hmm. Which is not really backward design. And so that would be like faculty saying, here's the classes I want to teach. What do we think that major would be, right? That's not really what we want to do. And so your question was, how do we know that? So if we're clear about what we want students to learn, and then we organize what we do to help them learn that, mm-hmm. which is really being student-centered. And we use that language of being student-centered a lot, and we very rarely are, I would argue. But if we're really student-centered and organize what we do around what we want students to learn, then we have to constantly be assessing, one, are students learning what we want them to learn? And two, is what we're doing helping or hurting them learning that? And assessment helps us know, are they learning what we wanted them to learn or not? Mm-hmm. And is what we did helping or getting in the way? And a lot of times what we're doing, what makes sense to us in a conference room or an office, actually doesn't work in a residence hall lounge or doesn't work in a student organization meeting. And so that's why we have to, I think one of the mantras I have around a curricular approach is it's not about us getting it right. It's about us always doing it better. Mm. And I think if we can let go of that getting it right, that perfectionist need that we have, and free ourselves up from that. And that's really about proving that we're smart, that we're hardworking, that we're dedicated. It's not really being student-centered. If we're really student-centered, we don't care if we got it right. But what worked, what didn't work, and how can we do it better the next time? And that mindset is a really difficult mindset shift, but it's a critical one for the success of that. And then when you have that mindset about how can we do this better, you get super excited about finding out what worked, what didn't work, how can we change, what should we keep. I thought this was a terrible idea. Turned out it was amazing for students. What do I know? I thought this was going to be groundbreaking. Turns out it was a dud. And how do we keep in that learning mindset?
Well, that's a a cultural shift for a department to go to that learning mindset and to willing to, as you mentioned, let go of the perfectionism and focus on improvement. I think some of that from an organizational level is that trusting piece, so that, you know, it's okay if you make a mistake. We're actually hoping that you do, so that we all grow and learn and move this process forward, and, or that we're not hiding the mistakes or the failures, so that we can all learn together. So I think that's a huge shift.
You're 100% right. And you're pointing to that this culture shift, which is hard because it's not like a four-step process, right? It takes time, it takes energy, it takes this mindset. And what you're also pointing to are really some of the obstacles to that learning organization mindset, or that culture of learning, which is our own ego, fear, taking ourselves and our work too seriously, and being risk averse.
Yes.
And cultures of fear and scarcity, I see again and again, as my role, not working on a particular campus, but working lots of campuses, one of the things that is so stunning to me as I go from campus to campus to campus and spend 2 days with these different organizations is the places where there is a culture of fear and scarcity mindset, innovation and creativity don't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a critical lesson from Brené Brown's work. But where people do, the opposite of that, though, is where people value students more than they value them, their own work. Their identity is not about their role or their work or their job or their initiative, but they're really focused around students. And they get innovative and they get creative and they can giggle and laugh about things that didn't work. It doesn't mean we take our work frivolously.
Mm-hmm.
We do our best thinking. We do our best work. But then we're open to maybe we got it wrong. And I think this mindset, the other part of that, the this learning culture, the culture of learning, learning organization, the other flip side of that then is embracing change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really hard thing. And, you know, we're noticing now that higher ed is perfectly capable of making major transformative change very quickly. We just don't like to do it. And we've got to get out of this mindset of higher ed change, which is, let's have a committee study this for 18 months, make a recommendation that someone may or may not take. That's too slow.
Right.
It's too slow in a global pandemic, and it's too slow in an ever-changing world that is not slowing down. How do we instead, in higher ed, take on the kind of pace of change that Silicon Valley embraces, where they brainstorm, they come up with some bad ideas, they test them out with a few people, they learn really quickly, they make it better, they test it out with a broader group of people, they learn really quickly and make it better, they test it out with a broader group, they learn really quickly and make it better, and once they've done several cycles of that for years, now they sell their product. And we get so caught up into, we would try and make the perfect app from the beginning, and we would take 3 years to do it, and they don't even try. They prototype, this is, you know, Stanford's design school, prototype, test, learn, improve, prototype, learn, test, learn, improve, and just keep going and doing that. And I think that could be scary for a lot of student affairs folks.
Yeah.
But once you flip to doing that, it's so exciting. It's so liberating. It's so free.
It's almost that learning by doing rather than of the committee for the committee by the committee. And then,
Well,
it's been double stamp seed. So we can move forward.
And I think the line I often use is there are some things that we do in student affairs that are life or death.
Of course.
And we have to get that right.
Yes.
But the rest of it, we're taking way too seriously, right? The rest of it, like, let's try something. Let's see. I don't know. We've never done it this way. Let's see how that works. And maybe it's brilliant and maybe it's not. And let's just be open to that and not get our identity and our meaning and value as human beings wrapped up into our initiative working or not. Let's be focused on students and let's see what works and what doesn't and how we can make it better.
Keith, I feel like you're singing my song. I love it.
Oh, good. I like this song.
Great. I could just sing the chorus or be a backup dancer. I appreciate it. So I know you work a lot with leadership coaching. How do you help leadership provide professional development, training, support, materials to their frontline staff that's implementing the curricular approach so that they can be successful. And of course, there's that successful culture shift and the mindset and the change and all those things that, but how can leadership best support its team?
That's a great question about the leadership coaching. And that, now you've got my mind making connections I don't know I made before. But yeah, I do a lot of executive and leadership coaching. I have a certification in coaching. I coach a lot of college presidents and CEOs and folks like that. And the succinct way I would explain leadership or life coaching is I help people get very clear about what they want. Mm. And most people aren't really clear about what they want. They're clear about what they should want, what their parents have wanted for them, what their mentor thinks they should want, what the people around them want, what they see they should want from TV. But when you get people really clear about what they want, and whether that's money or prestige or time with family or to learn, when they're really clear about what they want, then the rest of it is just strategy and execution. Mm-hmm. But most of us are so focused on strategy and execution, but we haven't figured out what we want. We're spending all this time, energy, and effort going in places we don't want to end up in, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's another way to think about a curricular approach. Let's get clear about what we want our students to learn. What do we want them to leave here with? What do we want them to have 10, 15, 20 years down the road when they move in next door to me? What do we want them to say? I can be a good neighbor to you, to my community, as I raise my children, as I run for school board, as I'm an employer, as I'm an employee. I can do this well because when I was a college student, I learned all these things about being in community and being in relationship and conflict and contribution and difference and fostering inclusion. And now I can apply that. When we're really clear about what we want, then it's just strategy and execution. And the strategies don't matter. I think one of the things people misunderstand about a curricular approach is I often hear people say, oh, we have a curricular approach and we do one-on-one conversations. Well, in a curricular approach, the strategies don't matter at all. Mm-hmm. It's what you want your students to learn and then what would be the best strategies to help them learn that. There's no particular strategy or learning opportunity or mechanism that you have to have. A lot of folks find shifting to more intentional interactions, one-on-one conversations is really valuable, but that doesn't make a curricular approach. So we're clear about what we want and then we just align our strategies. And when you see, and this is a great example, as folks have gone from having a curricular approach for in-person, on-campus experiences, residence hall experiences there, people who have a curriculum, they have just pivoted to how are we going to achieve that same learning we had aspired to with our students now that they're not here on campus? And you don't give up on the old curriculum and start a new one. You just pivot that to we were going to do this. We're going to do workshops and lunch. We're going to be able to do this. We're going to have a speaker. We're going to have commencement. Well, why do we have commencement? Because you can't, if you just put 20,000 people in a Zoom call, that's a disaster. Mm-hmm. Why do we have commencement? We want a ritual. We want a marking. We want a sense of community. We want a sense of closure and a sense of celebration for everybody involved. Well, okay, now what would we create, right? So to be clear about our purpose, now the commencement doesn't matter, but we want to do that. So how can we do that in maybe smaller ways, right? Maybe we'll do commencement rather than by universities, but we'll do it by college or we'll do it by school or maybe even by major. And we'll have a whole bunch. We'll have, you know, 100 commencements now, because we can do it in this way. And we provide some structure to that. So when we're clear about what we want students to learn, then the strategies can be very nimble. And we find out this one works, great, let's use it more. We found out this one doesn't work, great, let's either change how we think about it or let go of it. And we can be nimble and dance with that and constantly evolve to new students, new realities, new global contexts. It also really helps people when budgets change, when staffing structures change, because it wasn't about that. It wasn't about this program, it wasn't the staffing model, but as this shifts and changes, it was about the student learning. And so now given this context, now how are we getting engaged in this? So I'm talking with folks now who are gonna have RAs do one-on-ones with residents. And some of them are continuing to do that. Some of them don't have RAs, so they're having professional staff engage students. Some of them don't even have professional staff. So they're sharing those prompts and questions to facilitate the learning with students themselves and saying, as you're talking with your friends from school, these might be useful guides for your questions. Because I know as I'm talking with my friends from college now, you know, how are you only last so long? And then now what do we talk about? And so how do we provide some structures to have meaningful, valuable conversations in this context?
That's great. I'm certain that we could keep going. I do want to ask one final question, kind of relating back to what we talked about prior to the recording, which is if the curricular approach for the student life side of the house has been around for 13 years. Why hasn't it caught on like wildfire?
I think it is catching on like wildfire. So it hasn't caught on so quickly because initially it was a small group of people. The first institute was 42 people in January of 2007. It has emerged. Our last institute, we capped at 500 people. We had 550 actually who attended, and we turned away 150 people. And so it's a very expensive institute, but there are folks who bring teams of three or four. We had teams of 20 and 25 who were attending. So I think it is catching on by fire. A couple of things have limited it is the writing and the scholarship that has been out there has been relatively limited. There was a tool beyond seat time that Kathleen Kerr and Jim Tweedy wrote. And then it was really the only way you could access it in any detailed way was through the institute or bring in consultant to campus. Mm-hmm. Paul Brown, who you've also spoken with, has done a lot with his blog and through RoomPack, and they have a couple of books sort of outlining and describing that, collections of his blog posts, really useful. Several of us contributed to an About Campus article, Shifting to a Curricular Approach, mm-hmm. and then five of us have been working on a book, which will be out this summer, which is kind of a book written version of some of the things, walking you through all the process, lots of examples, lots of the why, the how, the what, also getting into a lot of pedagogy and assessment, and then some of the leadership for the things that we talked about around change, creating a learning organization, letting go of fear, scarcity. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that has emerged from all of this wasn't intended at the beginning, but has emerged is a lot of what I refer to as mindful leadership practices. There is a different way of leading mm-hmm. a curricular approach, which you alluded to very early on in this conversation. So I think it is catching on like wildfire. I think more people want it. What we're seeing is it's becoming more and more commonplace or expected in housing and residence life. And now we're seeing it just take on with student affairs divisions. Why would residence life and orientation and the Career Center have different learning outcomes for students? We should all be driving towards similar outcomes, but doing it in different ways, just like if we were all part of an environmental studies major, we would try and drive our students towards the same learning, but we would do it through different courses that we would be teaching and engaging students in different ways. And so how do we have the same kind of intentionality and clarity about our purpose, and then align our strategies with a focus on students and what they get out of it?
Great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yes. And if folks want to find out more about you or get in contact with you, keithedwards.com is your website.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Keithedwards.com. There's so much around curriculum and some of the other things I do. And if people want to reach out to me there, there's a contact form that generates an email that I see and nobody else does. You can also find all my social media connections, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of that from keithedwards.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.